Brings us to item 10, public hearing on Regulation 900 pertaining to Orson Pratt. Adam, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. If the commission remembers back, this was an issue that was originally brought up at the April 23rd, 2013 commission meeting. During that meeting, during a public comment period, there was a user conflict brought up in the horseshoe crab fishery. The user conflict revolved around gill netters and hen harvesters trying to harvest horseshoe crabs in the Thomas Cove area during the months of mainly April, May, and June when they're readily available in that spawning ground. The issue revolved around the fact that in the Thomas Cove area, gillnets are typically set up in shallow waters because they're catching large coastal striped bass in the area during that time. And on the counterpart of that, hen harvesters contend that because there are so many gillnets in the area, it's almost creating a blockade for horseshoe crabs to either get to the shore to be harvested or get to the shore to be in order to spawn. So with the gillnets out there, it could also create a potential safety hazard for the hen harvesters who are trying to harvest the horseshoe crabs during nighttime hours. During that April 2013 commission meeting, since it was not a timeliness issue, what was suggested was that members of the industry meet with VOMRC staff to try to compromise on a solution to this conflict. We held a horseshoe crab industry meeting in Chincoteague, Virginia on May 16, 2013. In attendance were members of VOMRC staff, members of law enforcement from the Eastern Shore office that generally deal with these kind of issues, and also members of the gillnet and hen harvest fisheries for horseshoe crab. It was a good meeting. Both sides were well represented with active members of both hen harvesters and gillnetters present. During that time, we came to a compromise that would allow both user groups to still effectively use the area. The compromise that came up with was specific to the Tom's Cove area. Tom's Cove is on the seaside of the Eastern Shore, all the way up north. It is a main spawning ground of horseshoe crabs, and it's a very small area, hence why the two user groups have this conflict. Defining Tom's Cove, this since it was specific to the Tom's Cove area, it would be the waters east of a line connecting Assateague Point to Fishing Point, all the way to mean low water of Assateague Island. You can see that these shallow waters up in here is where gillnet fishermen typically set their gill nets to catch these large coastal striped bass, and also this area would be where hen harvesters would typically come in and also try and hen harvest horseshoe crabs off the beach. So what the compromise was the gill nets currently up in the shallow water can be set in this orientation parallel to shore. They wanted a way to try and get the nets so they weren't necessarily parallel to shore up in the shallow, but more of a 45-degree angle. Law enforcement had problems trying to enforce terms like parallel, perpendicular, so we had to come up with some kind of a mechanism to be able to enforce some of this. So the first part of it was to open up the gaps between the gill nets in this area. So gill nets must not be placed that are fished within 500 feet of any other gill net. Currently it's 200 feet, so we're widening that gap, making these openings for horseshoe crabs to get through a little bit wider. Also during the time, April 1 through May 31, where both hand harvesters and gill netters are out there at the same time, actually in April, because the horseshoe crabs within 1,000 feet of mean low water close May 1. So during that time, gill net license is over 600 feet up to 1,200 feet in length, must have one anchor 800 feet from mean low water. And that 800 feet serves as a mechanism for law enforcement to actually be able to enforce this, because they can't enforce 45 degrees, but they can enforce a distance from shore. So that 800 feet would cause these nets to be set in more of that 45-degree angle with 500 feet between it. Typically, striped bass are harvested during April, May, and typically by June, from what the gill netters have provided, is those fish typically move out of the area. So the second provision would be from June 1 through June 30th, the gill nets will be only be allowed to be set between sunrise and sunset. Typically, it's a small mesh croaker fishery in that area, so you can still effectively use gill nets during the daylight hours in this area. And having the gill nets out of the area at nighttime would also add the navigational hazard for these hand harvesters out there in the dark at night. So this was the basis, this was the compromise during that industry meeting that both members of the hand harvest fishery and the gill net fishery came to. This would allow gill netters to effectively use their gear in the shallow water and would allow hand harvesters larger alleys between the net field to either harvest horseshoe crabs or for horseshoe crabs to gain access to shore to spawn. These changes to the regulation can be found on page 5 and 9 of the evaluation. Page 5 shows the definition of defining the Tom's Cove area, and page 9 shows the stipulations I just went through. This proposal has been advertised in accordance with section 28.2-209 of the Code of Virginia for a public hearing today. Staff has received no public comments to date on this issue. So based on the results from that May 16, 2013 horseshoe crab industry meeting and recommendations from the hand harvesters and gill netters of horseshoe crabs that attended that meeting, staff recommends amending Chapter 4 VAC 20-900-10 pertaining to horseshoe crabs to make it unlawful to set any gill net in Tom's Cove parallel to the beach or close to them 500 feet from any other gill net from April 1 through May 31, and prohibit any gill net from being set from sunrise to sunset, from sunset to sunrise from June 1 through June 30th to account for variation in harvesting practice among lizard groups.
Just out of curiosity, why do we start the regulation on page 5?
The regulation on page 5?
Yeah, it starts, the first page is page 5. Normally we start on page 1.
It's the amendment. So it started with the amendment.
So this is not the full regulation.
No, page
just those portions.
Regulation, page 5 of the evaluation.
Oh, I see. I see what it did. Okay. Gotcha.
Working in a new numbering system to make it easier.
Okay. Any questions of Adam? Mr. Tank?
Just so I understand, how are we in the field going to determine what 800 feet will be from mean low water?
What law enforcement has said they can do is they can take a GPS point at the anchor mark, and they can also get a GPS point at the shore, and they can determine their 800 feet distance based on those two things. And that's why we need an actual distance from mean water, low water to do that rather than just saying 45 degrees or parallel, perpendicular, whatever it is. We need an actual distance for them to enforce.
Neat. Okay.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Adam. This is a public hearing. We welcome any comments at this time. Yes, sir.
I don't see anything in the staff.
Come on up to the mic. Rick, come on up here so we can.
I mean, I'm just an observer, but I heard him talk about 800 feet. He showed it up on the thing, but I see nothing in the regulation talking about 800 feet right here. So it's there.
Yeah.
But it's not there.
Right. Anyone else? Ernie?
Can I approach and give me back that?
Sure.
Thank you.
Ernest Hayden, I'm president of the Eastern Shore Women's Association, and I'm one of the main gill netters in Tom's Cove. Probably am the main gill netter there now. This all came about when the commission passed the merchant regulation to put gill nets in line in the cove, which was called for along the coast, basically from Florida to Maine. Anything over 5 inches would have to be at least 81 millimeter. We had some latitude, so we made it 6 inches to allow people to fish. while we were having that discussion at the next meeting to make it permanent, another discussion ensued. It really wasn't pertinent to it. It should have probably been public comment, but it was related to it. So, and I'll give you a copy of this letter that you were given at the time. And I apologize. I was in the back, and anybody knows me, I can't hear. And I didn't understand all of it. But I went in the other room in good faith, and we tried to negotiate something that I thought we had arrived at something. But then I got a copy of the letter several days later. Mr. Travelstead was fortunate enough to let me have it. And when I started looking over the letter, I really got upset because it paints me as a criminal. There's probably hardly any waterman on the East Coast that's been more involved to help watermen in the state of Virginia. I mean, I've been to meetings from Georgia to Maine. I've been on a lot of committees. I've done a lot of things over the years to try to help people. 20-some years I've been on the Pennfish Committee, along with service member. So when I got looking at this, I'm thinking, you know, it's just not right, and I wanted to set the record straight. When you look at the letter, if you look at paragraph 2, that starts with 2 years ago, these nets were not there. My nets have been in the exact same place for years, and I don't know how many years, and for me to tell you exactly would be a guess, but it's been quite a number of years, so I asked for law enforcement from our area to be here. So if I say anything wrong, I would appreciate if he would get up and correct me. So I don't know how many years, but it's been substantially more than 2 years. It said, if, as you read down this, they were talking about different issues about the pine nutters at the recreation. I mean, that the gill nutters that caught the whole quota before the pine nutters caught zero. Their share was zero. And when you look at VMRC's information, I don't want you to trust me. I want you to trust VMRC information from their staff. It shows in that year they caught. The pine nutters caught 16,700 something, and we caught 12,700. So certainly they didn't catch zero. They actually caught more than we did, but it says in the letter it was zero. It goes on to say that the gill nutters asked for a lot more quota, and as I mentioned earlier, I do not hear that well, even with hearing aids, I'm afraid to say. I was at the meeting. I sat in between two of the pine nutters that are friends of mine. I never heard them say it, but that doesn't mean it wasn't said. The only number I really remember mentioned was Mr. Kuma said that the hand harvest needed at least 60,000. And I was still on the commission then. I said, it's not going to happen. You've never harvested 60,000. You'd have to take that from someone else. And it just wouldn't be fair, and I would be opposed to that. They mentioned that we got 15% of the increase. They all gave it up to us. I really don't know where that number come from, because if you look at the staff's stuff, they dropped from, well, way less than 1% the following year. So 1% would have been 300, not 15%. As you go down, the next paragraph says that we landed things in 9 to 12 days. Well, right here, I brought this from 2012. This is the year in question. Every day when I catch horseshoe crab, I write down what they are, male, female, the date that I caught them, and then report it. I check it when I report it so I know that they've been reported. And then you see these little lines. That's when I get paid each time, and I know that I'm current. 33 days. They said 9 to 12. I harvest for 33. I honestly believe I harvested the whole time. I know I quit on the same day as everybody, because when the quota was harvested, we quit. We had no choice. Now, somebody might have harvested before me, but if it did, it was very, very slim. So, I mean, you know, I just wanted to offer that. They mentioned they've been doing this for 25 years. I would like to ask Adam, could you put that up, what I asked you before? As you can see back, we can only go 20 years. Mandatory reporting system is 20 years old. Anything besides that is totally unreliable. It would be passed down from the National Marine Fisheries Service, and it would most likely just be offshore landing. But as you would look, you know, Gillnet has varied over the years, but every year there's been some landing except for 93. Now, out of the 25 years, we only can say account for 20. Six of those 20 years, they had zero harvest. Five of those years, they had under 10,000 harvests. So, it, you know, basically the last 5 or 6 years, they've had harvest. And a lot of that is market situation. You know, we sell. But I wanted to set that straight, that out of the 25 years, we got 20 here. Six of them wasn't work. Five of them was very minimal. And you know, they allude in that paragraph about the nets being illegal. Really, they don't say why they're illegal, just they're illegal. And then there was a little map. I'm sorry, all of it didn't come out on the back of your paper. And it had illegal nets and has them marked and stuff. And in all fairness, they would be illegal, because some of those nets would have to be over 3,000 foot long to accomplish the distances that it would require for two nets to cover. One place there I fish in September and first part of October, spot fishing, I have 3 rigs back to back. Another man has 3 more and joins on me. That's 6. They're showing it covered with 2. So they would be extremely long ones. And I'm sure, you know, Marine Patrol officer would certainly do something about that. But really, as far as the flags being illegal, we're allowed to have flags on both ends. They said some of them were faded. I put new ones on every year, or paint them. I got nylon ones too that made like screen wire that you can paint. Some of my flags are fluorescent orange with a black flag underneath them. I always have 2 flags. Some of them are international red with a black flag. That way I'll put 1 rig here with orange and orange. The next one will be red and red, so people can easily distinguish where they are and stuff. They're all at least 160, 180 square inches a piece with 2 flags on them. They have the reflective tape. I went out that day when they said this to see what was illegal about my flag. I found 1 flag that part of the reflective tape wasn't on it. One piece was, part of the second piece was. One of them, you're required, they didn't mention this, but you're required to put your last 4 digits of your commercial fishing card on it. One of mine, you couldn't read one of the digits. And that's the totality of what was illegal on mine. Were they 100% right? No. Were they in good faith effort? Yes. So, you know. So really, the faded part doesn't cut it because of no requirement for regulations. There's one man that comes up from North Carolina, fishes white flags. I hate to be around him on a sunny day because you can't see white flags on a sunny day, most especially in the ocean. I use these same flags when I'm 15 miles offshore, and I can go find my net. So, you know. And far as number 3, paragraph, third paragraph, talking about red knots and eggs and different things. I've never seen a red knot there. I have seen them in the lower part of Accomack County on very rare occasion. I won't say they don't stop there, but if they do, it's infrequent. And really, if we think that's a problem, we could have the same solution to have in Delaware Bay and go to a mail-only harvest, and that would allow more egg to be on the beach. I really don't think it's necessary because I don't believe red knots is a problem. There's only 2 places in the cove, really, that you see any shorebird. That's all the way up in the head of the cove we call Little Cove on the northeast, and then out to the front, there's a place that's a big flat that they go on that most of the other places the sand drops off quick. You don't see any shorebirds there. But when we get back to the map, if you look on the map, it shows you a grass area. In my lifetime, I've never known the SAV to be in Tom's Cove. Mr. Badger here, if there's any substantial SAV there, I've never seen it. You know, he's your engineer. He would be your expert. I've never seen SAV there. Lester was alluding to, like, France Island, different kinds of drift grass. I'm not even sure it's grass. There might be algae. But so really, I don't know where that came from. And far as if you look at the map, like I said, I apologize. Part of it, the northeast side didn't come out. If you look at the map, it shows us sitting down both sides. I'd ask Mr. Badger, can you do it, or Adam? I asked him to give us Tom's Cove chart with an overlay of all the private ground that's in there. As you can see, there's quite a substantial amount of private ground, and if I would set nets on top of those, I would use anchors. When you throw an anchor overboard before it grabs, you tow it a certain distance. Happens to be this side here are friends of mine with Tommy Mason, which Mr. Travelstead knows real well too, so does Mr. Tanker. I would take a chance of ripping their nets off. I'd be responsible for any damage I would cause. Mr. Erskine could probably tell more than I can. I think that somewhere between 15 and 30,000 clams under a net, I think, is typical. And if there's seed clams, it's more than that. So if I would pull my anchor 20 or 30 feet and destroy a couple nets, I could possibly be out a month's work. So I would never sit there. And if you would recall, Mr. Neal and Mr. Erskine weren't here, you had two letters at the April or March meeting from Aquaculture Interest in the Cove, never mentioned anything about gill nets. They said they had a problem with people at night, which would be hand harvesting horseshoe crabs, damaging their nets, and wanting them not to run their motors while they're over top of the ground, and which makes common sense. But I would certainly think if we were setting nets on top of their aquaculture leases, you would have heard. Some of them is oyster cages. I would never want to set a net on an oyster cage. I've been tangled up in one. Mr. Mason had a dock down in one of the creeks around Chincoteague, and it had caved in a storm, and he lost several oyster cages, and I got hung up in it. It was one of the worst days of my life, because the net just kept folding up on it, and it's in the middle, and you're trying to get it out. And fortunately, I had fish, but unfortunately, I had fish, too, because it made it that much worse. But I just want you to see, you know, there's a lot of leases there. So, then it's alleged that we kept them from catching their harvest that year. And if we could go back to the one day I learned how to do computer, I got a smartphone today, and I call people that I never intended. So. If you would look at this, and you would look back, the year that we were supposed to stop them from catching stuff is one of the highest years they had. There's only 2 years that had more than that, added a whole time frame. So I don't see how we could have kept them from doing it. And then they also said the year before in their letter that they caught it in 3 to 4 days. I made the offer when I was here that day that you could pull my mandatory reporting and look it over. You don't have to. I went ahead and brought it. The years, it's bad to have too many papers. The year that they supposedly caught their quota in 3 or 4 days was actually the year that I fished the longest of any year that I fished in the Cove. The effort was, I know I have it, I just don't know where I have it.
Ernie, talk to
me. At any rate, I've worked 26 days in 1 month, I think in 27 in the other.
Talk to us about the proposed compromise. Where are you on that?
You know, when I went in the other room, I went in good faith. And after that, we came out and said we thought we had a solution. And even though now I'm disappointed with this information not being correct, I'm a man of my word, and I said I would do something. And this is what we agreed to. We had a meeting after that without the staff involved. And we went to the meeting that staff was involved. Mr. Wimbrough and myself both said we had a deal. and we were satisfied with that, and then things got changed. Our deal was we wouldn't set closer than a 45-degree angle for the last 2 weeks of April, and we would remove our net for the month of June, which we never fish in June. It says in here that the nets were there for the whole fishing season, but we don't fish in June. But that was the agreement we had. Law enforcement had a problem with the 45-degree angle, and I can certainly understand that. They wanted to go with the footage, 800 foot. I'm fine with that. That's more than 45 degrees. 45 degrees would be 600, but I'm satisfied with the 800 foot. The 500 foot, I'm bitterly opposed to, and I'll tell you why. 500 foot is 1,000, not 500. If I set a net here, I go 1,000 foot away, and I set another net, and somebody sits in between, they're going to be within 500 foot of one of those nets. So if I would be the first one there, or someone else would be the first one there, they could place their nets 1,000 foot apart, and nobody else could fish. Because, not like the map you've seen, we actually only fish part of the coast.
Let me ask Adam to put that slide back up that shows the distances. Yeah, thank you. So,
you know, if you can look at this, you can see how far 1,200 foot is. But then if you look at the map you provided, it shows two 1,200 foot nets going all the way beyond what we see on the picture. So, I mean, you know, there's no realistic part about the 1,200 foot.
So you agree with the 800 feet, but you're opposed to the 500 feet.
I'm opposed to it. I'll do the 800 foot. I don't think we're causing a problem because, you know, we fished there the year before. They caught it in, they said, 3 or 4 days. I think I was probably overly optimistic. And then this year, they caught the bulk of it in a matter of a week. So, and it was the same fishery situation the whole time. Have we sold horseshoe crabs every year? No. A lot of years didn't have market. One year they had a big tagging study. I brought Mr. Robbins, was on the commission then, bags full of tags, and asked them, please don't do it again because they tangle up.
What, you don't like the 500 feet?
I'll agree with this because I agreed with it. You know, and I'm going to agree with the 800 foot because law enforcement needs something that they can get a conviction for.
So what do you want instead of 500 feet?
I would say everything but the 500 foot I would go with. Like, you know, we're basing this whole discussion on a letter that was flawed.
But you can't set one net right next to another. You need some distance.
Excuse me, Jack.
You need some distance between the nets.
It's 200 foot now. The whole state of Virginia is 200 foot. Anything you would do besides 200 foot would be arbitrary. That's one thing you can't do. Arbitrary caprices is something that could be overturned. It would be arbitrary to make us 500 foot. There's no science saying that we're hurting anything. There's no, it never got mentioned in any of our industry meetings until after we passed the emergency regulation. And the reason I came over, I'll be quite frank about it, is I was informed that several people had got nets that were inappropriate. The size net they had, everything they caught, at least 99%, was going to be illegal because they had no permits to land them. So anything you caught would have to be discharged. I'm a big drum fisherman. I've drum fished for a lot of years. I would never set a drum net in Tom's Cove. Large sandbars come in there. We still have a large population of sandbars in the state of Virginia. They spawn in Chincoteague Bay, but they do come in the cove. And I shark fished for years. I know this. I have experience. We'd be catching stuff we don't intend. Will we catch a turtle? Probably on occasion. But
I see everyone going to their code book. It's actually in regulation. It's in regulation 220 on the 200 foot distance for gill nets. There's a code section 307, but that's really mislabeled. It's applied to fixed fishing devices. But we do have a regulation 220, and we'll get a hard copy so the commission can have that.
So what I'm really saying is I'm willing to do something, even though I think we're basing it on flawed information. I can see the potential. It's not happening now, but I can see a potential. One of the things that they said in the letter here was there was a net that the anchor was actually at date, and it probably was. They're 100% right. Law enforcement was made aware of it. The man was told to remove it that day. It was not one of us people who fished there. It was somebody from a long distance away. He'd set it there on a real high tide. In all my life, the last 10 years at least, I don't think there's been any real fishery violations in there. We had a problem a couple years ago with somebody leaving nets. Law enforcement took care of the issue. Because if you're not going to fish nets, don't have nets. There's no need in killing stuff if you're not going to fish them. So like I say, I would move that you would adopt everything except the 500 foot because I think it's arbitrary. The state of Virginia is 200 foot. There's no reason that I can find that would support you going to 500 foot. And I certainly would challenge it because I feel that strong about it. You know, I feel like I owe it to Mr. Palmer to go with the agreement because, you know, him and I were personal friends. In the waterman were friends. And he was really upset when he found out about the letter. And I told him, don't get upset. He didn't need to be upset. The last time I saw him, he was down to a little bit over 100 pounds. You know, I would take care of it. And I'll take care of it no matter how much it costs me. And, you know, that's the way I am. I agreed to everything but the 500 foot, and I still agree to that. Even though I don't think it's necessary, I can see a problem in the future may develop, and that's the only part of it I don't agree with.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on this?
Hi, my name is Charles Monroe. I'm the one who wrote the letter, the initial letter, and asked to have this emergency agenda put in place. First of all, I think the big problem we're seeing here is that Mr. Bowden takes this as a personal attack. It is not a personal attack against him. We have to protect ourselves and our fishery, not just from one person, but from all gill netters. The problem was not with Mr. Bowden's net. It could be other people's nets. These nets were parallel to the beach. They were stopping the crabs from coming to shore. It had taken us from, in his letter there, he shows what we caught. We went from June until mid-July to catch that, and we still never caught our quota. We had 38 people in our fishery at the time. We now have 15 in our fishery. So it's not a personal quota, a personal attack against Mr. Bowden. This is simply the fact that, you know, if the gill nets are going to be allowed to be set this way, then anybody can set them this way. He might be a man of his word. He might set them 300 foot and leave it like that, but somebody else might not. That is the problem. The nets he's talking about that were left out there were a part of that problem. They were out there for almost 2 months. They lined our fishery. We could not get crabs to the beach. 200 feet does not give much distance for those crabs to be able to get to the beach and lay their eggs. Okay? You want to be able to keep this thing going and going. You're taking every step possible as a hand harvester to make sure this fish is a viable fishery and it keeps on going. So our kids will do it and our grandkids will do it. We're not trying to take anything from them. When this first come up, we all know here that we were pretty much going to a vote. We asked to go in the library to work with them. If anybody has worked with anybody, it's the hand harvester with the gill netters. At that time, we had tried to work out an area. Mr. Ernie Bowden is correct when he said we were picking different areas on the map. I am one person in the hand harvest fishery. I can't speak for everyone. Okay, I'm not the head of the association. So other members in the room were going, no, we don't want to do this. We don't want to do this. We had decided at that point when I asked staff, I'd asked Adam and Mr. O'Reilly, I said, how long will it take to get these notifications out if we do go ahead with this emergency amendment? Few days. It was going to be the 28th. Our fishery closed on the 30th. We had a moratorium from May 1st till June 7th. Through June 7th, I should say. All right, now, we could not see putting these guys out of work or hurting them in any way through that time. So what we said was, look, why don't we just table this for now? We'll table it. Is there any way staff could meet us over in Chincoteague so all these people don't have to come over here because it would be a large number of people? They agreed. We went over there and we met. Now, we went myself. I set up a meeting before this meeting, and it was I asked Ernie Bowden, Danny Bowden, and Verna Merritt to come. I asked myself, Randy Birch, and Mike Gibson to come. Mike Gibson, Randy Birch, and myself are hand officers. The other three were gill netters. We're pretty much the key players in this thing trying to work this thing out. We met at Mr. Birch's residence. We come up with an agreement. The agreement was pretty close to this, but a little off. It was the 45-degree angle. He was exactly right on that. But the next day I got a call from Mr. Merritt, Mr. Vernon Merritt. He had said to me that we'd forgotten a spot in the Little Cove where they catch rockfish. Wanted to know if we would agree to put nets in there just parallel to the beach so they'd catch a rockfish. I talked about it with the hand harvesters, and we said, look, we don't have that many crabs coming there because the cold fluctuation of water, we're with you. Sure, we'll do whatever we can do to make sure you guys catch yours. Just let us catch ours and don't damage our fishery. That's all we're asking. I would like to mention that, you know, we took the initial step here. When we went to the staff, we said, hey, can we introduce this moratorium, this control date that has been on the record for a while, and we've never really put it in place because staff was having a hard time predicting these numbers, 85% quota fill. We said, let's do it right. You guys got a letter. You're absolutely right. From Tommy Bowd and Tommy Mason. Said their clam ground nets were damaged. Why was that? It was because when we started out, before that moratorium was set in place, we had 12 harvesters that were pretty well active. Then we went to 38 licenses being sold in 2 years. Big guys out there had no clue what they were doing. So we stepped up, myself and Mr. Gibson, said, look, we'd like to cut this back and set this control date in place to better manage this fishery. It will help BMRC, it will help us, and it will help the clammers. I contacted Tommy Clark. He's the vice president, and I'm president of the local shooting range for the NRA over on the island. He's my vice president. He did not have one net cut this year. I talked to Tommy Mason, who Mr. Ernie Bowden asked to come here, or write a letter and refused to. And he said he did not have any problem with this. So this is not attack on him. This is, we just want to protect what we have. Every year, the hand harvesters have come over here, and it's something different to protect our fishery. We're not asking for trip limits being raised. We're not asking for more quota. As far as the 15% he's talking about, the 15% that was given was my nomination at the industry meeting saying, hey, when the pound netters were complaining about the gill netters catching all these crabs, because the pound netters have a stable net that cannot be moved, and the gill netters could move their nets, they were the ones complaining about it, not the hand harvesters. They wanted the gill netters to have their own category. That's how they kind of got their own quota. I said we had overages from the year before we were getting back. I said, why don't everybody from all these categories give 15% of their overages, give these guys a quota because they have to handle the crab anyway, and make it so it works for them too. That's what we did. I'd like to thank
Wimbro, talk to us. Do you support this?
I do support this. This was the second meeting we did. This is the one where they met. This was not the private meeting. This is the one we met at the Civic Center in Chincoteague.
How important is the 500-foot distance to?
Very important because as it was 200-foot parallel, they were 200-foot when they were parallel. So how would this be any different if it was 200-foot now? You're still going to have the 200-foot between the net. They're not parallel to the beach, so they can't block everything. It does go out a little bit. If you give us 500 feet, we have room to catch those crabs. The year that I was talking about here, the problem was the only place we were finding crabs was where the gill net split. I didn't come up here to bash anybody. I never brought a picture of somebody's license and said this net is illegal. I'm not trying to give them a ticket. I showed pictures to staff to show where these gill nets were illegal. There was no reflective tape on them. I showed it to staff at that meeting. The balls were yellow. There was no numbers on them. The float lines were on top because they had a 12-foot net and 2 feet of water, so it bagged out. That's the truth of the matter. I don't have a reason to lie about it. All I want to do is go in and catch my hand harvest and sell it, not cause them problems, and certainly not hit a gill net.
Can you live with something less than 500 feet?
I think the more you cut that down, the more detrimental you're going to be to the fishery. My problem, my biggest concern is not Danny, Ernie, or Vernon Merritt. These guys fish this area most times. But we have people who come up and fish it too. We have a guy that left all these gill nets in there tied in the year I was talking about that fenced off a lot of the area. You get those guys and 3 or 4 more other guys in there, and what do we have for our crabs to get to shore? These crabs migrate from the front of that cove to the back of the cove depending on water temperature, time of year. When it comes in, when it starts off, they're at the back of the cove because that's the warmest water. And when it starts to die out, they start going back out to the point to go out and migrate north again, where the cooler waters are at. So if we give too much here, what's going to happen is we're going to be right back where we were at before. When we're back in front of you again, we've resolved nothing. I don't want to hurt them. I hope they catch all the rock that they can catch. I want them. They had a record year on rock this year. They were done with their horseshoe crabs by May 16th this year. We were done with ours by the 14th of June because the nets weren't there. This is proven that this works because the day that this was brought in front of you, he went home and pulled his nets out of the water. They were on his boat and on his dock. The day we went home, from that point on, we didn't have any conflict from nets. All this year, we had no conflict with nets. This year, I'll give you a few facts. Fact one, 2012, gill netters had their nets parallel to the beach in Tom's Cove. That was the issue we come here about. Not to remove gill nets from Tom's Cove. Not to say get them out of our way all the time. Just not parallel to the beach. So our crabs can get to the beach. Fact two, Hand Harvesters had 38 licenses out there in 2012 that were eligible to go. Not saying they all went, but they were eligible to go. Fact three, 2012, Hand Harvesters harvested till mid-July and did not catch our quota. Fact four, 2013, the Gillnetters moved their nets after the April meeting. We didn't have any nets in that cove in our way after the 2000 meeting. Fact five, in 2013, the number of hand harvesters was cut back to 15. That was when we set the moratorium in place, trying to control our own fishery, trying to make it better for everybody so this works for everyone. Due to the fact that staff had a hard time with their quota, predicting the 85%, because if you've got 38 licenses, even though they didn't all go, they might go one day, and your quota could drastically jump. I called Tommy Clark from the complaints from the clam nets being caught, not cut. There was no clam nets cut this year. There was no clam nets cut for Tommy Mason this year. They were fine with it. They said everything worked out great. Why? Because we got rid of the people with latent effort. They come in and had no idea what they were doing. They were running over people's grounds with their props. And, I mean, I've seen things in the past that weren't right, just not from the Gillnetters either. I mean, from the hand harvesters either. It was from Gillnetters. But that was taken care of. Myself and Mr. Gibson come up here and got that passed, so we would be all right. Fact six, the Gillnetters reached their rockfish quota in record time in 2013. They caught them fast this year. They did very well. Come from Ernie's mouth himself. Average rockfish was 20 pounds. He was catching 40 of them a day. So obviously, we're not hindering them. It's working this way. Fact seven, in 2013, the Gillnetters filled their quota of horseshoe crabs by May 16th. They were out of our way and gone. Fact eight, in 2013, hand harvesters filled their quota by June 14th. So we were there 6 to 7 days catching our quota. We had bad weather, but those nets weren't in the way. The way I look at this is simple. If the nets aren't in our way, because I've had Danny come up here the meeting before this and put the hand harvesters down, they're tearing our nets up, they're cutting our nets. We don't want to hit a gillnet. I'm in the dark in a Carolina skiff with a 2 million watt spotlight trying not to hit a gillnet. I've been thrown, because we have hit gillnets, and thrown into the bow and cut my hand open before. You can't see them if there's no reflective tape. That was the big issue I had with it. I don't want to hurt anybody's gillnets. I'm not out there to hurt anybody's stuff. Fact nine, no clam nets were caught. Both gentlemen agreed.
How many more facts do you have?
fact 10, hand harvesters have been a viable fishery since 1993. Okay? Our problem is that we need to be able to work together. They need to be able to allow us to have ours and them have theirs. If these nets were there all the time, common sense tells you we would have been in front of you a lot sooner than now. Plain and simple. They went out there up to 3 years ago. Was Mr. Ernie Bowden? Sure, but he runs his almost perpendicular to the beach, not parallel, off the Coast Guard station. So it works. We're not asking to remove the nets. Just make it feasible so we can get to our fishery as well.
Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes, sir. Danny. How many facts are you going to present?
Okay, Mr. Brown. I'd rather be in place Dalton here today. I'm just tired of hearing about horseshoe crabs and gill nets. And to you members who have been recently appointed to the commission here, you're going to find that over the last 2 years, this has been quite a contentious subject here. The reason it's become contentious is actually people are really making money. The price of crabs have gone up, and also the price of striped bass. That time of the year, middle of April to the end of May, striped bass are the highest they are at any other time of the year because Virginia at that time is the only state where striped bass are harvested from. Now, that's one little thing there. Horseshoe crabs, they have gone up. It's not the quarter they got back in the 70s. It's $3 a piece now. So whenever you've got, no matter what the fisheries are, you've got two different user groups out there, there's going to be a conflict. Did I put the hand harvesters down? Sure, why not? They put me down. That is the history of people fishing. One user group is always putting another down. And commercial putting the recreational down, and recreational putting the commercial down. That's not what I'm here to talk about. Get a couple things straight here just for information. The reason you set nets parallel to the shoreline cove there, when you're fishing, you're trying to do this as efficiently and as profitably as possible. If you're setting at an angle here, there's more chance being conflict across the tide here that you're going to have more debris going into your nets here, which will foul your nets. On the other hand, when you set across the tide, you will catch more fish. That's just how it is. There's one, this, that, whatever. Another reason for setting parallel to the beach here is also, and this is the secondary species I've tried to catch when I was in there, was that you get along the slopes of the bank there. As you can see, well, a little bit of weight there. You have flounder come along the slopes there. And your larger webbing, when it's collapsed down, you can entangle flounders into it. All right. Now, so much for that. And Arne, I've got to correct you on something while I'm up here. You do have knots around the cove, Robin's statement. Folks are probably looking at the last person in the Commonwealth of Virginia has sat down to the table to eat them. I want the Fish and Wildlife to know about that, but that's how it is. It's 300 years of Banner Island living distilled down, I guess, percolate through my DNA. I don't like new rules and regulations. Again, that's 300 years living on the Barrier Island. But when we had this meeting over here in Shinkatook, everyone did get their heads together. They did. And when they're coming up with this compromise here, Mr. Rollins said, Danny, how do you feel about this? I said, Rob, whatever consensus is, I'm for it. Okay, go along
with
it.
You can live with this.
With this here. I am. I talked with Mr. Kidney yesterday on the phone, and I reiterated the same thing, just what it is, because the truth of the matter is, both us and the Gilna ancestry, and those guys also who are hand harvested here, we have a larger foe here, and I spoke about this before, and that is going to be the federal government, because we're just hop, skip, and jump away from them and shut it down for everybody. And when we did have this meeting here at the time up there, lo and behold, here is the refuge manager sitting back there taking all this in as well. And that's where my real fear is at. I don't agree with everything up there. I'm not saying I like it neither, but I can live with it. That's it. And hopefully this will be something that will, how should I put this, help calm the waters. That's the thing here. And as far as anything else, anyone getting personal over this or that, godly day, I grew up that right in local neighborhood stores or a fish dock. There's always someone that's going to throw a jab at you, so you just got to put on your suit of armor and take it and go back. And that is all I'm going to say right now, Jack. I'm trying to keep that Pentecostal blood in check here and not get on the floor for that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Mike Gibson, Horntown, Virginia. I agree with this. That's about all. I think we'll just go with that. We've heard a lot, so I just think we agree with this.
Thank you. What kind of fish are?
I'm a hand harvester or horse repair. Thank you.
Sure. Those are your reports.
Some people probably never seen them. This is 3 years. In May, I had apples. I don't know where they are. They must still be in there. But I'll give you an idea. They were talking about we were directing horseshoe crabs. If you look at the top, my wife has summarized all my landings for that month, and that's all the individual ticket. Mm-hmm. So I want you to say you know that it's been going on for a very long time.
I have a question for Mr. Bowden, if he can.
All right. Sure. Mr. Plumlee.
Excuse me.
I just want to make sure I understand, because I got lost in the discussion about the agreement, that these two items appeared to have been agreed to after that May 16th meeting, but you're saying that that was not the case?
I didn't understand.
I'm talking about the 500-foot issue now. Our write-up and the presentation indicates that there was agreement between the two sides at that meeting, but you're saying that that's not accurate?
I told them at the time I would not agree to anything, that I don't see in writing because I don't hear very well. And Mr. Merritt said, tell him yes. I said, I'm not going to say yes because I'm not going to agree to anything that I don't see in writing. So I never did agree with it at that time. We never really had that kind of meeting. Rob gives a very nice presentation and stuff, and then it was more or less like walking around having personal discussion type thing.
All right.
So for us to take a formal vote, that never happened. If it did, I missed it, and there's a very good chance that if they did it verbally, I could have.
Okay.
But no, I never did agree. I agree with what we came up with. I agree with everything but the 500 feet. I want you to see these mandatory reports because it was suggested that we're targeting horseshoe crabs. If I never caught another horseshoe crab, it wouldn't hurt my feelings. As you can look these over, because like I say, I'm sure you've never seen Virginia's mandatory reporting form, so it would be nice for you all to see how it works. And like I say, my wife is totaled the front. I have April. They might be out in the truck. If you want to see them, I can get them for you.
And can I have a follow-up question?
Yes.
Ernie, tell me again exactly why you oppose the 500-foot width between nets? I didn't.
500 foot becomes 1,000 because if I set a rig here and I go 1,000 foot away and I set another one, anybody sitting in the middle would be closer than 500 foot. So what law enforcement would have to do is write both of us a citation. Even if the other fella admitted that he did it, I'm still out of day's work. I have to go to court because you're in violation because they're too close together, and then it's up to the judge to decide who was the person was there first. So if I said I was there first and Mr. Tanker said he was there first, it's going to have to be the judge sorted out. I think so. That's one reason I'm against it. Like I said, we're talking 1,000 foot. Right now, there's very few net towards Little Cove, which is a very good place where they harvest by hand, up in the head of the cove, from what I understand. I don't go out there at night. But that's the only reason I'm against 1,000 foot. I mean, 500 foot because it becomes 1,000. 200 foot, if I set 400 foot apart, somebody would be in a 200 foot violation. But if I set 500 foot apart, they could actually sit there. We're setting off on an angle. Horseshoe crabs are not a gillfish. I mean, you know, they're not even a crab. They're in the spider family, but I don't entangle but a small percentage of them, a very small percentage. By being off there like that, they'll track the nets and come ashore. I've heard some of the people tell me that they actually done real well behind one of my friend's nets 2 years ago, because he told him, you know, that net had the most crabs ever to fish it. So he went behind in hand harvesting and said he'd done real well. That's the only problem I have is the 500 foot. The rest of the state is 200 foot. Why should I be any different? There's no scientific reason for it. Like I said, it's just sour grapes. It's basically what it is. Because I want to protect the resource, the defensive resource. I don't want... You know, this is one of the few areas that there is no recreational fishing conflict. There is no recreational fishing there at all, zero. If we go on the outside, when I'm fishing, I see people lined all up and down the beach surface fishing for striped bass. So if you have to push me out, you're going to cause a conflict that's needless. Like saying, I've been in there for a number of years. I really wish you would ask your law enforcement to answer your questions, because you know, he'd be better prepared to answer them, because you might think I'm biased. And I would never ask you to believe me. I ask you to believe the statistics that I showed you that VMRC presented, and that's all I really want to do.
Thank you, Ernie. Anyone else? Mr. O'Reilly.
For the benefit of the commission, Mr. Plumlee had asked a question, and what occurred on May 16th was we did have a very interactive meeting. There was a lot of talk with law enforcement to see how they could possibly enforce certain situations with the gill nets. There was talk with all the groups there, which is the hand harvest and gill netters. At the end, I did write down the, if you want to call it a compromise, the compromise information. There were about six rows of folks sitting down, the harvesters sitting down, and I walked right up in between the first and second row, and I read what the elements were of the compromise. So it was done that way, and I want to make sure that at least you hear that part of it. Now, what happened was after that, and I'm going to guess it was probably around June 10th or 11th or so, Mr. Bowden called me, and he said, I understand what was done. He said, I can live with everything but the 500-foot distance. I said, Ernie, I read everything, and everyone there was in agreement. He said, I did not hear that. He said, I didn't hear it. And for that reason, we asked that the commission postpone. Mr. Bowden was going on vacation in June. We asked for the hearing today because of that. So I just wanted to let the commission know that. I also wanted to point out to you, and perhaps Mr. Kugelman has seen the exact same thing, the authority is not quite statewide on the 200 feet. It appears that it's everywhere but in the Chesapeake Bay tributaries. Everywhere else it is 200 feet, and it reads, any gill net, whether floating or submerged, is not assigned a fixed location shall be fished no closer than 200 feet to any other gill net. In the tributaries, that is not applicable, and the only thing you have to avoid is that you really aren't fixing nets tied end to end. The other part of this is the code does come into play here. The reason for gill nets being in 28.2.307, length of fishing devices and gill nets, most of the information does pertain to fixed fishing devices. However, in paragraph B, it says the commission shall, by regulation, establish the minimum distance between any net and the side or any of any fixed fishing device. So, for that reason, there is some authority in the code.
Section was that wrong?
That's 28.2.307. And clearly, you can see this gill net regulation if you realize that in 1995. Every one of the VMRC regulations was modernized and had to come through the Virginia Administrative Code. So really, it's been since 1992 when this regulation that you have in front of you was last amended for any purpose. So on the statewide, it's not quite statewide, but certainly Tom's Cove falls into the as do other areas except the right. Chesapeake Bay tributaries.
Thank you. Hold on. Let's see. Any questions for Rob? Mr. Erskine?
Rob, it seems that that Chincoteague meeting, the 500-foot, is what is a concern. And I'm wondering, was that arbitrary? Was there a biological reason for 500-foot? Is that the crabs aren't coming ashore? I mean, how was that determined?
Well, I don't think it was biological at all, but I think probably it was just a process that took place, and it started out, with coming into that meeting, what you heard today from the meeting that was held among the hand harvesters and the gill netters before we met with them, they had come to this idea of the 45-degree angle, that the nets would be set that way to avoid the parallel. We kept talking to Officer Marshall and others there, and we finally got to a situation that resolved the placement of the net where it was, if the anchored 800 feet off the beach would take care of that problem, it would give them something that's enforceability. The 500 feet was just a give-and-take process through that meeting, and that's Mr. Bowden is right. We were going from area to area, in that small building and just...
Rob, was there any discussion of any other distances other than 500 feet?
I don't recall any, but I'll have to rely on anyone else on staff who was there.
It was, I guess it was essentially offered, and everyone who heard it agreed to it at that meeting. And that was the end of the discussion, because you had agreement.
Well, the end of the discussion...
I thought you did.
Was actually at the very end, and I'm trying to draw his name up. He has Ray Shanty. Pardon?
Twyford.
Ray Twyford, thank you. At the very end, to sort of put a dot on everything, we started talking about what you heard Mr. Wimbrough say, the fact that they were going to be closing out soon with their quota. That was obvious. And would it do any good to have this come before the commission now and be finalized in July? And I stated that it would be very good because, as you know, we're going to have an October meeting. We have a survey that's out there for all the harvesters, and we felt that if we could address this issue now, even though it would not affect the hand harvesters, it was one less thing to be concerned with in October. And Mr. Twyford, who had sort of raised a question about that, said, no. He said, I agree with that. That's good. Go ahead. And he may be less than a full-time gill netter there, but I think he does some gill netting. So, again, the only thing that I will substantiate is that there was that conversation when Mr. Bowden called me, and I was very surprised at first. And then he went on to say, well, I really didn't hear that. So,
Yes, sir. Mr. Kugelman.
Mr. Riley, I just want to make sure the record is very clear on this point. It's just something I'm, as counsel to the commission, I believe I just want to make sure is clearly stated on the record. What is the basis for the 500 feet? Is it by the agreement? You said it wasn't science. Is it because of the agreement or the commission staff understanding of the agreement coming out of the meeting?
That was the agreement in the meeting, and that was what was provided to everyone at the meeting. But
the 500 feet?
Yes, but it really was just something that occurred that day. It was not, no one, from what I remember, said, why not 600 feet? Why not 300 feet?
But the basis for the commission's determination of 500 feet is that that was the understanding of the agreement among the parties at the meeting.
Sure, that's correct.
Okay.
Which is perfectly reasonable if you were trying to resolve a dispute between two user groups. And
yeah. And if I may, that was not supplied by staff. Staff did not supply the 500 feet. That came out of the...
Any other questions? Anyone else wish to be heard? No, I think we're good. I think we're good. The public hearing's closed, and the matter is before the commission. The reasoning behind any distance, whether it's 200 feet or 500 feet, is to allow some amount of crabs to get to the beach to spawn, and in doing so, it also makes them available to the hand harvesters to be taken. There apparently wasn't a lot of discussion at the meeting about 500 feet versus some other number, and maybe that needs to happen. As has been stated multiple times, 200 feet is the current distance, and that's judged by many to be inadequate. What I can't tell, because of the lack of discussion at the industry meeting, is 300 feet, 400 feet, 450 feet workable? You know, is it agreeable to all? So I would just throw up that option that, you know, you have some time to find a solution if, in fact, more discussion from industry will result in that. I don't know. But we've certainly heard from all the sides sort of feel where they are. Mr. Erskine?
I guess I'd only make the observation, I agree with you that there are other numbers between 200 and 500 that could clearly be discussed. But Mr. Bowden wasn't the only gill netter in the room. There were presumably others that were discussing this, and seemingly 500 foot was somewhat agreed upon. And so I guess, if for no other reason, I think that maybe is a starting point. It seems to me that there has to be a compromise here somewhere, and I don't know if 500 feet is what the entire industry would feel comfortable with. But you have two users here, and I think it was fairly discussed at a meeting that encompassed more than one gill netter. And so I would feel comfortable with staff's recommendation.
Any other comments, Mr. Plumlee?
This, when groups meet together like this, as Mr. Bowden understands, it's an extension of the commission in terms of trying to gather information and come to some type of agreement. I hate to see those efforts be defeated in some regard. You know, when it appears that there's agreement coming out and then we're trying to second guess what occurred at the meetings and it appears as though there's a unified position. So that's why I would tend to want to support that agreement, and if there's opportunity to adjust the distance at a later time based on experience or usage or input from law enforcement about trying to enforce distances, that I think the commission would be open to hear that and flexible with hearing that. But it's difficult to undo what's being presented to us.
Mr. Tank?
Yes, I understand both arguments of both gentlemen. But at the same time, I think we've gotten by with the 200 feet for, generally speaking, most of the base watershed except for its tributaries, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And I have to, Mr. Bowden's experience there is long-term, and I highly value what he states or testifies to. And in some ways, I have reservations about moving away from what has been the state law thus far, 200 feet. That's my comment. It's not a motion. Comment only.
Is there a way to compromise the distance on the floor now? Are people too uncomfortable with that since we haven't had the players all in one place to discuss the different distances?
You know, I think you make it very clear. We don't have enough commentary on it in a way, but we've had a discussion between user groups, and we came to what we thought was an agreement, but under testimony today, maybe that agreement's not exactly what we should have. I don't want to belabor the decision or delay the decision, I should say, but at the same time, we're doing something different than is ordinary, and our regulations are generally based on pretty sound science and reasonable enforcement. I have a hard time with this one, and it's in, you know, it's close to my backyard. So.
Anyone else?
Can we leave it to the commissioner?
Unfortunately not. It seems to me you've got two choices. You can go with the 500 feet and argue that the majority of those who were present at the industry meeting supported that. Or you can stay at 200 feet. Anything else in between, we have no advice on. Mm-hmm. We've not heard from anybody in the industry whether, you know, 400 is an equally good number or 375. So it's either 200 or 500, and I think
both
adjustments on both sides.
Both of these adjustments are restricting the gill netters. They're modifying their practice.
That's right.
I guess my position then would be to be on the less restrictive side and to err on that end and to bring back more information if additional distance would be required, so that we're not making two changes in regulations affecting the gill netters where we have disagreement, but one, and then we're open to hear additional information about whether the distance should be increased beyond 200 feet. That, I think, might be the better route because we're burdening that group with this consideration. And that's where the disagreement is.
Sure. You make a good point.
So who wants to make a motion?
So thus, I'll make a motion that we adjust regulation to conform to staff suggestion or staff recommendation, I should say, except for the distance between nets will be 200 as opposed to 500.
I'll second that.
There's a second to the motion. Everyone understand the motion? Any discussion?
Can I ask staff a question?
Yes.
Adam or Rob or somebody on staff, in your opinion, when you require the 800-foot buffer from the nearest shoreline, would that allow more crabs to get to the shore?
What was discussed at the meeting was allowing these extra buffers either between the gill nets or setting gill nets in this manner would open up the spaces and, I guess, not allow for almost a blockade of gill nets. So, yes, it would. Additional space would allow more corridors for potentially horseshoe crabs to find their way to the shore to either be harvested or...
For the 500-foot, but the 800-foot buffer from the shoreline...
The 800-foot as well.
Okay.
As far as being... parallel the shore, get that offshore anchor a little bit more to allow more corridors around.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other comments? Ready to vote. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Sounds like it's unanimous. Thank you.